This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and thank you for staying with us on BFM 89.9. I'm Kuzo Chung with Shazana Mokhtar and Noah Lim. Let's take a look at markets. And of course, in America, the Dow was down by 0.8%. The S&P was down also by 0.3%, and the Nasdaq was up by 0.1%. But in Asia...
Yeah, it's a green day. Yesterday, Nikkei was up 0.8%, Hang Seng was up 0.7%, Shanghai Composite was up 1.5%, SDI was up 0.2%, FBM KLCI likewise marginally up 0.1%.
And of course, the FBM KLCI was also up. So to explain all this and the whys and wherefores of markets, we've got Jeffrey Haley, the senior market analyst at Owenda. Jeff, thanks for talking to us as usual. Now, something intriguing overnight, US-listed Chinese stocks has gained. And this is intriguing because it was quite a broad-based recovery. Your Alibabas and your Tencents and your Baidus were up, as well as Chinese EV stocks. How do you explain that phenomenon?
It's a little hard to put a finger on that one. I mean, Chinese stocks have had a good couple of days, and I believe that's driven by the expectations that China's government will start fiscal stimulus sooner rather than later after some very soft softer data last week. I can only assume that we're seeing some bargain hunters and bottom fishers coming into the market, as we have seen in Asian markets over the last couple of days as well. I don't think it's necessarily anything particularly driven by the US listed ADRs that's occurring there. I think it's more of a catch-up play because the US was closed on Monday.
Well, looking at the trend, Asian equities in general is still underperforming those in the US and Europe. What are the factors causing causing us to lag behind these other developed markets?
Well, the main one has got to be the COVID-19 situation, which is, of course, causing terrible problems across much of ASEAN in particular. So when we look at across ASEAN X, sort of Northern Asia, we can see all these countries having to have managed this latest Delta variant wave. It's caused mass lockdowns, it's reduced economic activity, and in some cases, some countries don't appear to be making much progress on actually bringing it under control. And that's caused investors to mark down growth prospects for ASEAN and thus the stocks that are listed in those markets. When we look at China, every single day there seems to be another announcement of a new clampdown on a different sector of the economy, and so many of them I can't really keep up. And I think the this burden, this joint prosperity philosophy of Xi Jinping will cause China stocks to be marked to trade at a discount to US peers going forward, and I think that is definitely weighing on China valuations. And it's only because this stimulus hopes have raised in the last couple of days that we've seen those stocks bounce back.
Yeah, Jeff. Just in terms of China, right? And this the latest data seems to suggest some material slowdown in car sales and property sales. Do you think that's going to bite for the long term in terms of the clampdowns on the economy?
Yeah, look, when you take it in combination with all these ongoing restrictions and this joint prosperity, et cetera, that seems to be moving through China's government into the private sector, you do have to wind back, I think, China's growth prospects this year. We're going to have to see how that new government policies play out. I think some of the data is distorted, though, in recent times by some of the selective lockdowns in various cities and ports, like in August, to control their small COVID-19 outbreaks. But also China is having the same problems as everybody else, blockages or disruptions in global supply chains, and also rising material costs, and that is weighing on, I think, the growth prospects as well. So I think we're going to have to dial down our expectations for the China recovery for the rest of the year.
And turning over to Japan, Jeff, the Nikkei 225 is inching towards the $30,000 level, even at a time when Japan is battling a surge of virus cases and waiting for a new prime minister. So given these market headwinds, what's driving the bullishness on Japanese stocks?
I think to be honest, I think it's a case of rampant FOMO going on over there, to be honest. Look, since Mr. Suga announced that he would not be standing for this election, Japanese stocks have been on fire now. A lot of the turnover on the Nikkei these days is driven by these short-term retail investors, and they tend to be quite herd-like creatures. So the connection there is that because the Japanese Prime Minister is stepping down and we're going to get a new Prime Minister, and there's an election just around the corner and due in Japan as well, that the government will open up the fiscal stimulus tax there and do a bit of pork barrel politics ahead of the election. And that is what is boosting stocks. They're moving higher in expectation of some quite strong fiscal stimulus from the Japanese government, which should be on the horizon. We haven't heard any noise from that actually at the moment, but that's certainly, I feel, what's behind the rally in Japanese stocks at the moment.
So what would you buy in Japan? Or not buy?
I think you need to treat it with a little bit of caution there, but I do like the commodities houses. The ones that Warren Buffett bought into last year, I think they're very, very sound businesses, and commodities are still very, very strong. And I think that sector still holds some appeal from a dividend stock. I think the large banks as well will be a good recovery play too, if you've got more of a longer term perspective.
Yeah, and of course, we've seen some pullback in oil, Jeff. What's driving that phenomenon as well?
I think it's the softer US data. The soft US data from last Friday, the non-farm payrolls, which was a shocker, and also soft Chinese data last week as well, raising a few nerves about the pace of the global recovery. And we've seen US equities reacting in a very similar way overnight because of that. I think those concerns, and along with OPEC adding 400,000 barrels per day of global production this month, and with their intention to keep doing so in the months ahead, those combinations have come together to depress prices somewhat. I still feel that oil's fundamentals are quite strong, but and the futures markets are still in backwardation, but I think oil needs to wear some short-term pain.
And Jeff, looking over to El Salvador, where they have just made Bitcoin legal tender, but the coin has dropped 17% at one point. What do you make of this? Do you think that this experiment shows that cryptos could be a viable alternative to fiat currencies, or is this a pie in the sky?
Well, I was a little confused about this. Now I see Bitcoin's come off overnight as Bitcoin does, but. I looked at the average wage or the average salary of an El Salvadorian, or the GDP per head, however you want to describe it, and it's $4,000 US dollars. But it costs, this morning, $47,000 US dollars to buy a single Bitcoin. So I'm sort of wondering how the mechanics of that work, because the average El Salvadorian can't even afford one Bitcoin, let alone use them in everyday life. So I know you can use these Satoshis, these smaller increments of it, and I guess that's the plan. But I've got a feeling that those El Salvadorians who get paid in bits of Bitcoin are going to just as quickly switch them back into US dollars cash, which is what has been the default currency for El Salvador for some time. I mean, El Salvador is a bit of an economic basket case. I think we'd have to see this go into some more, perhaps more mainstream economies. So I'm struggling to see how the whole thing is going to work, to be honest.
All right, Jeff, thanks so much for your time. That was Jeffrey Haley, Senior Market Analyst at Owenda. Now, just in terms of Bitcoin, right? El Salvador, I think a quarter of the economy comes from remittances from El Salvadorians working abroad. So, of course, when you have Bitcoin, that particular transaction, and I guess the speed of that liquidity would attract El Salvadorians. But I think there's also some elements of... populism there, because the new prime minister, he panders to the people. He's got a 90% approval rating, even at a time when he's imposing some kind of authoritarian measures on the economy. So the jury is still out on Bitcoin's experiment in El Salvador. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.